Welcome to the Senate's Public Safety Budget Division meeting. Today is Monday, February 9th, 2009. And we are continuing with presentations and questions for the Department of Public Safety. We have with us Mary Ellison, the Deputy Commissioner, and Michael Campion, the Commissioner. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Public Safety, and with me is...
Mary Ellison's Assistant Michael Campion. I work for the Department of Public Safety also.
As it should be. Members, your agenda is inside your budget books. And Ms. Seufert actually put the relevant budget pages on the agenda, so we would know how to follow along. Like we said, every day we thank Alice for all she does. It's a good thing. Did you get through your entire presentation the other day? I know we were really rushing to get through.
Madam Chair, it's my understanding that we did, and then that we were asked specifically to come back today to address several questions that Ms. Seifert put in an email.
Okay.
So what I thought we would do, the Commissioner and I are here, and we have some of our division directors that are related to the specific questions that you asked, and we would just go through each of the questions and then answer them as best we can and then go from there. Does that
sounds
sound
good?
All right.
We'll take questions as they come along.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the first question that we were asked is if DPS was required to do a 5% cut, what would this look like? And we have a handout. Has that gone out?
Yes.
Okay. And you will see that, first of all, just let me make a couple of overall comments. When you look at the overall budget for the Department of Public Safety, including the areas that fall within the Transportation Division, so when you look at all of Public Safety's budget, 86% of the general funds are either in the 20, there's only 29% of our overall funds that are general fund dollars within the Department of Public Safety as a whole. And when you look at that 29%, 86% of those general fund dollars then are in the divisions of justice programs and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So we're talking about some general funds that are very specifically targeted to two divisions. If you look at the divisions under the purview of this committee, the Public Safety Finance Division, really 95% of the general fund dollars that we're talking about are either within the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension or the Office of Justice Programs. So when you look at this chart, you'll see that what kind of dollars that we're talking about if we talk about reducing those dollars by 5%.
So, Ms. Ellison, did the governor request that you do this 5% exercise when he was putting together his budget?
Madam Chair, we were asked any number of different questions about different levels of reductions.
Okay. And I'm assuming you gave him more detail than this.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that we really did. We said that we thought that it would take some further discussions to realize where the $4.2 million would come from. Obviously, 90% of it would come from those two divisions, the BCA and or the Office of Justice Programs, but specifically, for instance, Office of Justice Programs, whether it be battered women's shelters or sexual assault centers, we just didn't get to that level of detail.
Were you asked at all, Commissioner, about 5% of administrative costs or anything like that?
Madam Chair, I don't think even there isn't any money in there is very little money in the administrative costs of public safety. You couldn't get $4.2 million out of administration, if I understand your question correctly. So the money really, the substantial money is in those two areas. The grants that go to local units of government for domestic assault centers and battered women's shelters, and forensic scientists and law enforcement officers, special agents in the field for the BCA.
Madam Chair, I would point out, though, that the 5% includes all of the general fund dollars that go to those agencies, and that would include administrative funds. So when you look at, for instance, Office of Justice Programs taking a $1.8 million cut, that would include administrative money as well as grant money.
Any questions on this table? Senator Foley?
Madam Chair, where is the special revenue and the Fed, whatever they put into the pot, are they able to separate that out?
Ms. Ellison?
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, if the description of the federal funds would be in two places, all of the federal funds that we have are described beginning on page 119 of the budget. And so that gives you a listing of all of the different general funds that we receive and the purposes that they are to be used for. And then if you look within each division within the public safety area here, it will lay out by division the general fund dollars we receive, the special revenue fund dollars we receive, and the federal fund dollars that we receive. So it's all laid out within the budget book. When you look at the overall, all funds within the Department of Public Safety, and again, this includes the transportation areas and the public safety areas, 19% of our funding comes from miscellaneous special revenue, highway user tax distribution 3%, general fund 29%, trunk highway 29%, and state general state government special revenue 20%. So I don't know if you have a specific question about a program, or those are the general numbers.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair and Commissioner, what I asked for was just in order to determine what level of federal impacts and others that you might have, and what impact will any funding decrease? I mean, these are matching funds, are they not?
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, it depends upon which program you're talking about. Some of our state general fund dollars we can use as match to federal funds, and in some areas we can't. So I don't know if you're thinking about Office of Justice Programs or Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So the answer is yes, sometimes we are able to use the state general fund dollars as match, and then in other times they're in addition to the federal funds.
But, Madam Chair, Commissioner, on that, you essentially need the matching money to fiddle it, whether it's in the front part of it or not. Is that not correct?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Foley, I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. Like, for instance, in the Office of Justice Programs, we're able to use the general fund dollars as a match to the federal funds that we receive. That isn't true across every division.
So, Commissioner Ellison, so, for example, in Senator Berglund's division with health care, when we cut general fund dollars, we often lose federal funds. Would we be in that position with the federal funds in this division?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in some areas, yes. Some not areas. Across the whole agency, but in some areas.
Okay. Other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
That gets to the heart of what I think we need to know if we're looking at any kind of a cut, that you would need to know if there were federal funds that could be lost because of the taking the thing without a match.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, what would be helpful and I think more responsive is if the committee has a specific area that they're saying we think that we're going to cut in this area, then we would be able to tell you the impact on federal funds if there is any impact. We would be able to tell you that very directly.
So
but to answer
together,
in a general sense, it's hard because we have so many different program activities.
As we go along, we'll have to make sure that we keep in close contact about all the effects of the cuts. Okay. Good. Senator Ma?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think that the assumption here is that we're looking to cut certain areas and we're looking to see what the impact is. I think the assumption here is that we don't know how magnified some of the consequences are. So it is not necessarily that we have an intention to reduce in one area and we want to know what the consequence, but I think it would inform us to know what the consequences would be so that we could at the front end be aware of what the potential consequences are as we assess. So it makes it a little bit different.
At some point we will be given a target, and I don't imagine it'll have a plus number in front of it. I assume it'll have a minus number in front of it. And so when we start that process, it matters about, you know, where we try to recommend cuts. And, you know, as we saw last year, what we recommended in this division didn't make it all the way through. So, you know, there's a big, long process.
Well, and Madam Chair, understanding what the difficulties we're in, I think that, I don't know about other members in the committee, but I am absolutely committed to the idea that to the degree that we could multiply the state dollars that we have by preserving whatever federal dollars that come with it, I think we should do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just foolish to disinvest in an area that's bringing in federal dollars. So, you know, I don't think it's an issue of making a decision to cut somewhere, but maybe it's an issue of getting enough information so that we can understand how to prioritize when we're making the decisions, that if a particular area is enhancing, if by investing in a particular area we're enhancing federal investments, then maybe that's the area that we don't want to cut. So that's, I think, that for me, that's what would be helpful in making the decision, is to say, gosh, I mean, why would we want to hurt a potential to bring in the federal dollars or to do away with federal dollars if that's our only place where we can magnify the impact that we're making?
Commissioner Ellis.
Madam Chair, Senator Moore, what we could do if you want, I mean, we can go through the whole budget, you know, page by page and talk about the federal dollars that are related to each division. I mean, again, in a general sense, when you look at the area of two areas where there are the most general fund dollars, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and then the Office of Justice Programs. In the Office of Justice Programs, for instance, in the crime victim reparations area, we are able to use state dollars as a match to federal funds. So if you cut state dollars, there would be an impact on federal funds. In the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, generally the federal funds are in addition to the state funds that we have. We're not in a position there of, you know, having them, if we decrease the general funds, having them count against us in the federal funds. So I could give you that as a general overview. It's just difficult to say, you know, or in the area of Homeland Security Emergency Management, our disaster funds are matched. We have to match 25% to what the federal government puts in. Mm-hmm. So that's another area where there's a direct correlation. Those are the general areas. I mean, that's about as specific as I can be, unless we go through, you know, each individual budget line by line, because the federal funds are listed in there in a description, and it usually says in the budget book where they're used as a match to federal dollars.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right, the next item was the DWI reinstatement fee. The budget book talks about this on page 13.
Madam Chair, again, we handed out a chart that we hope is responsive to the question. It lists the fiscal year, the number of reinstatements, the fee, the surcharge, and what went to the lab, what went to the BCA lab, the BCA conference fund, the state patrol, the trunk highway, driver's license, general fund, and on and on. So it lists, it's all broken out.
So the surcharge is getting up toward almost twice what the actual reinstatement fee is?
Madam Chair, if that's what it says on the chart, that is in fact true.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, let's take a look at this here. So the chart shows that on 2004, there were, give or take, 21,000 reinstatements, up to a high of 31,000 in 2007, and then back down to 29, almost 30, in 08. Do you track a trend line of any kind to know if significant numbers of more people or less people lost their licenses in 08 that might be trying to reinstate them now and coming up in 09? Do you have any way of tracking that kind of thing to see whether this will stay about equal or where it might go?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I wouldn't venture to guess where it's going to go. I mean, we track the trend lines in terms of, as you see here, how many people are reinstating. But I couldn't make a guess as to whether that would stay stable. I don't know if anybody in the audience can make a guess about that.
Madam Chair, I would offer that perhaps one of the explanations from 2004 to, say, 2007 or 8, maybe it may have been an increase in federal funds that come through public safety that go to local units of government for DWI saturation details. It may be. I don't know that for a fact, but it would be one logical explanation for it.
Okay. Mr. Ahrens, do you have anything to add? Mr. Ahrens?
Madam Chair, members, for the record, I'm Frank Ahrens, Finance Director for the agency. I believe it was in state fiscal year 2003 or two, there was a significant increase in the surcharge at that time. And due to that increase in surcharge, there were a lot of reinstatements that took place in fiscal year three, you know, prior to fiscal year four. So that's why we had a significant decrease in 2004. We had only 21,275. That's the lowest level I think we've had in the last 10 years, I believe. So for state fiscal year 2009-10-11, we are estimating that we'll have approximately 29,000 reinstatements. That's what we're basing our budgets on, which I think is a pretty safe number based on what we're seeing here.
All right.
Madam Chair, if I could offer, these are the numbers in the left-hand column, the ones you're looking at. Those are just simply DWI reinstatements. I believe that in 2007 or perhaps 2008, as a for instance, there were 41,000 DWIs issued. So there, perhaps in 2008, there's 10,000 people that received a DWI that didn't reinstate their driver's license. Now, some of them may have chosen not to drive at all, but that might also indicate that there's people that are driving around with a invalid driver's license because they received a DWI and didn't bother to reinstate it. But I think that trend has been close to the 40,000 a year mark, give or take obviously a few thousand over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Senator Mott?
Madam Chair, I wonder if Mr. Turner would have the schedule of the different increases, because I believe that the surcharge was on a schedule to increase by each year, and this year being the most, or was it last year that triggered the 430, but that wasn't the case, right, Mr. Turner?
Madam Chair, Senator Mott, it was a number of years ago that we did do, I think, a triple-tiered increase, but the $430 has been in place for a couple of years now, I believe. I can get the exact chronology for you. I've got it downstairs. I don't have it with me here.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, based on what you're saying, it seems to me that that we more likely have a severe problem in regard to people getting stopped and arrested and losing their license and ultimately never get any return on that. Have you, in your saturation squads and other things, detected any trends in those to indicate that we need better concentration in order to prevent that from happening?
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, I would agree with Commissioner Campion that it's certainly anecdotally what we're hearing is that the reinstatement fee has become large enough that there are some people that are just choosing to either not reinstate their fee or driving without a license. I believe that the State Patrol probably has some figures that would be relevant to, you know, tickets issued for driving without a license. Certainly Driver and Vehicle Services would have some data. I don't have that with me today, but we certainly could gather some of that data.
Okay. So the governor's recommendation that's on pages 12 and 13, it says the governor recommends moving the funding for the Forensic Science Lab DWI enforcement program from the general fund to the trunk highway fund. So tell us on the chart what moves from where to where, and which is something moved from the 67% general fund to, I guess I don't understand how things move around on this chart.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Ahrens to explain that, to shed light on
it. It's good that he's
here,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's good.
Mr. Ahrens.
Madam Chair, if you, I'll refer you to page 37 of the governor's budget.
All right.
And under current law, we have an appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund of $373,000. And what's being recommended is that $1,568,000 that currently is appropriated out of the general fund for the BCA lab now be appropriated out of the trunk highway fund. So the governor's recommendation for 2010-11 is that appropriation out of the trunk highway fund now would be $1,941,000. If you concur with the governor's recommendation, you would then appropriate $1,941,000 each year of the 2010-11 biennium. And you can also see this on the page related to the forensic laboratory, which is found on page 41. You can see under expenditures by fund, direct appropriation, trunk highway. You can see that the amount of money that was out there for 2008 and 2009, and then the increase in 10-11, and again, that's the movement of the $1,568,000 from general fund to trunk highway fund.
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
Madam Chair and Frank, why is it that you want to move that to the trunk highway fund?
Mr. Ahrens.
Madam Chair, Senator, It's my understanding that this was an area that had previously, some time ago, been funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund. All of these dollars had been funded. In other words, I'm saying the $1,941,000 at one time had been funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund, or an amount similar to that. And I don't have my paperwork with me, but I believe it was in the 2000 session that the entire amount was taken out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and all of the funding for the lab in this particular area was moved to the general fund. And then the following biennium, we did receive some trunk highway funding. And I think the argument was, this funding out of the trunk highway fund did not meet the constitutional purposes for which the trunk highway fund could be spent on. And there have been some issues related to that.
Madam Chair.
And what this does is basically fund an additional portion of the laboratory out of the Trunk Highway Fund as it relates to blood and urine analysis that's done on behalf of cases for the State Patrol. State Patrol, as you know, is funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and the argument being made that more of the funding for the lab, being that over 8,000 cases, DWI cases, are being handled annually, that more of the funding should be made out of the Trunk Highway Fund, in that a lot of these cases do relate to the State Patrol, as well as other jurisdictions that are making DWI arrests on the Trunk Highway system. And I think that's the argument why additional funding should be made out of the Trunk Highway Fund rather than the General Fund as it relates to these blood and urine analysis that are being conducted by the forensic laboratory.
Madam Chair, I would also add that I think our belief was that there was a little less pressure on the Trunk Highway Fund and the General Fund, and this was not creative, but this was an alternative funding source. The constitutional question already had been answered because Trunk Highway money also already goes to and has in the past gone to the DWI analysis program at the BCA for DWI testing. So this was an attempt to relieve some of the pressure on the General Fund. Not that the Trunk Highway Fund isn't experiencing pressure, but less pressure than perhaps the General Fund.
So, Commissioner, if this money now will come out of the Trunk Highway Fund, what kinds of programs that are now funded with that money, how are they going to be funded? Will they not be continued? Or is this just extra money in the Trunk Highway Fund? It didn't sound like...
Madam Chair, I don't know that there would be any programs not funded in the Trunk Highway Fund. This would just, and it wouldn't be any additional money with this particular proposal. It would just be the same amount of money funded from the Trunk Highway instead of the General Fund.
Well, it actually looks like it's an increase, isn't it?
No. Madam Chair, this is not an increase in the level of funding for the forensic laboratory. It's we're taking the $1,568,000 that were general fund appropriations, and that is now going to be substituted for the like amount of Trunk Highway dollars, $1,568,000.
Okay, so you're just taking it from someplace else.
Yeah, we're taking from the general fund and now funding it out of the Trunk Highway Fund is exactly what's being done.
I don't know why I cannot get this concept. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, whoever would answer the question, it does sound, however, like if you're taking money out of the Trunk Highway Fund, those programs or projects that would otherwise have been funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund will experience a shortfall of some amount. Has the governor proposed what to cut out of the Trunk Highway funded programs?
Which would be like in Senator Murphy's division,
like
would be our
Senator
guess.
Murphy's division, highways.
Has anybody told him?
Bridges,
etc.
Madam Chair, Senator, there is money in the Trunk Highway Fund to be able to afford to make this change. I don't think we're this very small appropriation, increase in appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund, I don't think that's going to have any impact on road construction or road maintenance by MnDOT. It obviously fits within the Trunk Highway Fund balance in order for this to work. So I'm not aware of any projects that won't take place now under MnDOT because of this increase in appropriation being made.
Senator Moore?
Madam Chair, I think that we're the ones who are shifting our costs to the Trunk Highway Fund. So obviously in this budget division, we're pretty excited about that because, you know, we're continuing to have something that's important to us funded by someone else.
Yeah.
But as a member of the Transportation Committee, I would think that we would probably, I would like to see this discussion in the Transportation Committee because historically the Trunk Highway Fund gets raided, or you know, costs do get shifted onto the Trunk Highway Fund, which was I think, constitutionally set aside for a very specific purpose. And we've always been very careful as we look at what costs get shifted into the truck highway fund. So I would think that the Transportation Committee, I mean, I think it's good for us to be creative about how we can continue to fund programs in this division, but I would think that Senator Murphy and the Transportation Committee would want to see this change, this budget change.
I assume when you go visit Senator Murphy's division, this gets discussed there as well?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, we will be presenting to the, Senator Murphy's committee as well.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on this? Senator Moore?
Madam Chair, Mr. Ahrens, while you're at the table, I was looking at this allocation of fees for the DWI reinstatement fee. And speaking of the Trunk Highway Fund, I noticed that in fiscal year 2006, we zeroed out the 20% from the DWI reinstatement fee that went into the Trunk Highway Fund. And then we do we shift that 20% to the driver license accounts, the special revenue account? Is that in essence what we did? Is that we took the 20% that would have gone to the Trunk Highway Fund and we shifted that to the other account?
Madam Chair, Senator, in state fiscal years 2006 and 2007, part of the governor's proposed budget in the 2005 legislative session, a proposal was to move the driver vehicle services, particularly their driver's license activity, which had been receiving an appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund, to make this activity a fee-based activity. So a decision was made by the legislature, recommended by the governor, made by the legislature, that we would now appropriate dollars out of special revenue accounts. So these dollars that had been going to the Trunk Highway Fund are now being deposited in the driver's license account in the special revenue fund, and that money is being appropriated to driver vehicle services for their operations.
So, Ms. Ahrens, at one point, right, we did put some of the DWI money into the Trunk Highway Fund, but we, in essence, basically terminate any contribution from the DWI reinstatement fee into the Trunk Highway Fund, and we created this other account. So now no money from the DWI reinstatement fee goes into the Trunk Highway Fund, right?
Madam Chair, Senator, that is correct.
Any other questions on this piece? Thank you.
Madam Chair, the next couple questions that you posed to us deal with the support division at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Office of Communications. You asked for a description of the duties of the criminal apprehension support area, and that is found on page 52. I would note that you had asked also staff about staffing numbers over the past several years. We look back over 10 years, and 10 years ago, the support area in the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension had 10 staff people. Today they have 6. So again, you can look at the activities that they perform on page 52 of the budget. Basically, they support the activities of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, in a nutshell. Then you asked about the Office of Communications. The staffing level for that area has shifted over the last 10 years, but has basically remained very, very much the same. I mean, it goes up one position or down another. Right now, I think they're about at 9.4 positions. The Office of Communications, just to be clear, isn't within the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. It's an office that serves the whole department. Most of the funds come from either the Trunk Highway Fund or from the federal government. Only $41,000 of the Office of Communication funding comes from the general fund. Again, I'm not sure if you had more specific questions about those two areas. That's a general overview.
Okay. Commissioner, it was when we looked at this, it looked like this would have been a place where it might have made sense to suggest cuts. But when you said it comes from the Trunk Highway and federal funds, there again, it doesn't affect the general fund to speak of. Over the last 10 years or so, has this staffing level changed much? Has
are you talking about the, Madam Chair, are you talking about the Office of Communications?
Yes, well, the other as well.
She didn't hear you, what she said about the BCA support.
The BCA support has actually decreased over the years. The BCA support area has decreased from a staff level of 10 years ago down to 6 currently. They provide general support to the whole Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And again, their duties are listed on page 52. And then the Office of Communications is really located within the Commissioner's Office, and that's an area, a staff that is described on page 16, but they serve the whole department, and most of their money comes from either the federal government or trunk highway funds. They serve all divisions within the Department of Public Safety, and only $41,000 of the communications budget comes out of a general fund.
And so how much does the Office of Communications, what do we have for funding here?
You look here.
$6 million for the biennium?
Just trying to find that page, Madam Chair.
Maybe page 18?
Sorry, it's page 18, not page 16. Yes, $6.1 million for the biennium for 10 and 11, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, yesterday or the day before, there was an article in the Star Tribune in regard to broadband operations, and that there was a problem on delivery of that that precludes us from using any of that to match the federal funds that might be coming forth in the variety of wherever we are right now. Does that ring a bell to you at all?
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, no. I'm not clear. I didn't see the article. It has to do with broadband coverage?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the inability to use that for other purposes in connection with the...
Are you talking about with the ARMR system? The ARMR 911 system? Or
with the 800 megahertz.
With the 800 megahertz. I would ask Mr. Wiggins if he knows if there's some new development in the area of broadband as it relates to our 800 megahertz.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, is that perhaps money that was going to be in the stimulus,
yes,
federal stimulus package? And I don't think we have enough details as we sit here today to know what the specifics are. Obviously, it hasn't passed Congress, and we just don't know what the specifics are, if that's what you're referring, if that's what the article referred to.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Campion, that's right, it is. And the article referred that to not be usable for any matching funds, apparently.
I think the Senate took out a lot of the broadband funding out of their side of the proposal. And I think part of it was concerns that the states didn't have the matching funds. But I'm not sure I got that right. But does that sound familiar, Senator Foley?
Yes, but
I
do have your article down in my office. I'll see that you get it.
All right. Yeah, I'd appreciate that, too, if you'd forward it on to me. Okay. Commissioner Ellison, would you then kind of walk us through the FTE changes in the department?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the areas that you mentioned, criminal apprehension, forensic science, Office of Justice Programs, criminal investigations, fire marshal's office changes, and the law enforcement community grants. The overall explanation for the FTE changes that you see in the budget book is that when we were preparing our budget, the instructions that we received from the Department of Finance was that we were to include a 3% and 6% for 10 and 11 increases due to step increases insurance increases. And so when we, and without any salary supplement. And so the decreases that you see in the budget book relate to the fact that we had to include those assumptions when we developed the budget without any sort of salary supplement. So you do see FTE decreases. That does not necessarily mean that there's going to be layoffs. It just means that we will have fewer funds to pay our salaries with. So it could mean that we hold positions open. Depending upon what the legislature does, if the legislature doesn't adopt the governor's recommendation, then, of course, we would have to see what sort of impact that would have on our budget. But that's the overall description of why we have FTE reductions within our budget. You asked specifically about the fire marshal's FTEs and those increased. The committee may recall that the fire marshal's office is now funded through a special revenue fund, and they received some increase in funding, so therefore they were able to increase their supplement of FTEs. Again, are there specific questions about each of these areas that we can hone in on, or does that answer the question? Or
I think it's mostly because when we have a time when so many people are being laid off and tax revenues are down because people are losing their jobs, it is really hard for us to look at our division adding to that problem by laying off people. And so if these were actually layoffs, I think that probably everybody in the room would be really concerned about putting more people out there who don't have a means of income at this point. So it isn't really layoffs in the traditional term coming in this department, right?
Well, Madam Chair, when you look at the budget book, when you look at full-time equivalent reductions, it doesn't necessarily equate to layoffs. Again, I think as we get further along in the budget process and we get more details from this committee and also from the House committees as to what you're exactly looking at in terms of any reductions, if at all, we would be able to give you more specifics. But in terms of the budget preparation, what we were told to do was to assume a 3% increase and a 6% increase because we know we'll have step increases. We figure we'll have insurance cost increases. So if you don't get any salary supplement, what does that do to your full-time equivalent positions? And so that's what you see reflected here.
Okay. Any questions on that piece? Okay.
The next question that you had was, would the BCA be receptive to accepting and processing public defender evidence? I would ask Superintendent O'Malley to come forward and talk about that.
Superintendent, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim O'Malley, Superintendent of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Regarding the question on accepting evidence from the defense bar, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Lab will accept evidence from anywhere that goes towards proving who did or did not commit a crime. Our approach is, as all law enforcement approaches, to determine truthfully what happened. And if we get evidence that either shows someone did it, or if we have someone who's a suspect and they come forward with evidence that would show they didn't do it, both investigatively and in the lab, we would do whatever we could to determine that. Once a case gets into court, there's the adversarial process that's set up so that the defense and the prosecution kind of clash and hopefully the truth emerges. But short of that, if anything were to come forward, in fact, right now the defense or the prosecution is required, if we have any evidence of any kind that is exculpatory, to disclose that to the defense. So I would tell you that right now as we sit here, if a defense attorney came forward to the prosecutor and said, listen, I have some evidence here that's going to show my person didn't do it or someone else did, we have a mechanism for bringing that in at this time.
For the most part, though, Superintendent O'Malley, does the defense bar use a private lab, or and then, I mean, generally speaking, the prosecutors use the BCA, or do you actually have kind of a mix as in the workload now?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, no, your first statement was more accurate. We don't get much evidence from the defense bar, and I think part of it is that there is this requirement on the prosecution's part and on the law enforcement's part that if we have any information that would either be show this person didn't do it or could lead to evidence that would indicate this person didn't, we need to disclose that. So I think the defense is hesitant about maybe coming forward with evidence that may prove to be detrimental to their client. without knowing the results yet. So I think more often than not, they go to a private lab. Then they can have that information confidential to themselves, and the defense bar does not have the same constitutional restriction on them that if they come up with evidence, they do not have to disclose that to the prosecution.
Interesting. Senator Foley?
Madam Chair, I was curious to know where this request came from.
I believe Representative Paymar last summer had a working group, and it came up in discussions there.
Okay. We'll discuss it further.
Okay. There again, I am not a lawyer, and I generally don't know how these things work. So it's the education of the good senator from the north side as well as anything else. So, anything else? OJP.
Yes.
Thanks, Superintendent.
Thank you.
You asked about reductions in programs, overview of Better Women's Shelter Services, law enforcement community grants, and then this discussion of the federal burn grant area. Basically, the reductions that you see in the budget book largely are due to the fact that there were one-time grant programs, so that we received one-time grant dollars last year that then are taken out of the base budget for this year. And that includes the emergency fund, the auto theft impound fee, parenting time centers, child advocacy centers, and support services to victims of homicide and suicide. Each one of those categories were one-time funds, so then those are backed out when you see the base for 10 and 11. Then there was an increase of $1.7 million each year of the biennium for all of crime victim assistance programs, but the tails were only $737,000 each year. So, again, you'll see a reduction there because there was a one-time increase of $1.7 million, but then it goes back down to $737,000 for 10 and 11 biennium. Then there were law enforcement and community grants reductions. Again, one-time grant programs for that we received in the Office of Justice programs for homeless outreach, squad car cameras, COPS programs, youth intervention programs, legal advocacy clinics in the human trafficking area, defibrillators, and at-risk youth delinquents under age 10. Again, those were one-time grants this biennium, and they are then taken out of the budget for the out years.
We had a little tails problem putting that bill to bed at the last minute.
And then, Madam Chair, members of the committee, you asked about the burn grants. They're now called the Justice Assistance Grants. We all still call them burn grants, but we've had a 67% reduction overall in 07 and 08 of that program. And the programs that were funded out of these funds that are now funded by the legislature include drug courts, gang and drug task forces, and the victim information and notification everyday system. We've also funded loss support for, or the legislature also made up some funding in the area of youth and community crime prevention area. We are following the stimulus discussions, as are all of you. We can't tell you what's going to happen at the moment. It looks like there's $1.2 billion in the federal stimulus bill for burn JAG programs. If that is the case, we estimate an award of $5 to $6 million each year, which certainly will be an increase over what we've seen in prior years, but we don't know what the language is going to be, what kind of restrictions we're going to be held to, or what exactly the amount will be until the federal Congress makes a decision and passes a bill.
Okay. Five or six would put us back to the number of a couple of years ago. It would definitely be an improvement over the last one.
I'm sure that's correct.
So the OJP programs, were there any other deductions in all of these OJP programs other than the one-time funds?
Madam Chair, I'd ask Director Bolton. She says no.
These are, I think, my most favorite parts of this division. So, and like I said the other day, I think these are the parts that we see in our communities as much as anything. So, I think I'll be seeing my congressman tonight. I think I might bend his ear a little. Any other questions?
None.
Commissioner?
I have nothing more
for
you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you for giving us more information on these items and more clarity on what some of the things in the budget books actually meant, and we will stay in close touch as we go forward. Our meeting on Wednesday will be much the same, only it will be the Department of Corrections. We seem to have a lot of questions for the Department of Corrections. And so thank you all for coming, and we are adjourned.